well, the last week when none of us was here, after the notion of Hennessy Miller logic was introduced, and some basic properties thereof were proved. Now we want to go to the issue of doing recursive equations in Hennessy Miller logic, which in fact will amount to doing modal new calculus or fragments of modal new calculus in disguise. I don't know if you have ever seen or heard about modal new calculus, but it's actually the reference to modal new calculus would be very good supplementary reading for this particular chapter, even in their main reference book, the Pacetto and company book, they are doing their best to disguise it. Right? So they're only talking all the time about recursive equation, and they are avoiding the issue of presence of negation in the language in as much as possible. And we'll see soon why the negation is problematic here and why modern new calculus is not as nice or as natural as a formalism, as ordinary Hennessy Miller logic or modern logic is. So let's return, and maybe I can borrow the words for a while, okay? So let's return, let's, in order that should be consistent with notation introduced in the previous lecture, let's write again the definition of both, not necessarily down there, of Hennessy Miller logic as it was written in the lecture, and definition of semantics for it, which in the broader world of modal logic is called cryptic semantics. Here it's called label transition systems. So the notation was that we have a set act of atomic actions. This is what how it was called. Yes. So. Then a notion of LTS, label transition system, for this set of action was a structure of the form, or was letter. Okay, let's call it T to be consistent with what was so far. Consistent of the set Q of states, or however they were called. Then we had the set of transitions labeled by those atomic, maybe I should call it that, the set, yeah, atomic actions, labeled by those atomic actions. Actually, the notion using the lecture put this act explicitly here, which is not strictly speaking necessary. The important bit is this. Right. So, where this thing was a subset of Q-square parallels. In general, it is possible to consider formalism where this thing is a subset of is a ternary relation, so subset of Q to the power of 3, and so on and so on. But this is not so meaningful in the context of the subject matter of this lecture, namely label transition system, communicating processes, and in fact it does complicate both the syntax. Well, even though morally it's more or less the same thing, the modal logic that you obtain in metatheorems, formulating everything gets much more messy, verbose, and there are some things one has to be careful with. So we stick to the notion of having just binary relations, unlike in terms of the logic that we have seen so much in the El Grudat lecture, where there was no, the binary relations were not privileged. In any way, so now we have, moreover, we have also no unary predicates, right? So it's a specific feature of the development for label transition system and communicating processes, that one really tries to live in as much as possible with variable on the purely modal level, before one starts doing recursive equation with variable free language, when we're only talking about whether things get stuck or don't get stuck, basically. So, so far, the thing that we, or those people who attended the last lecture were seeing, was extremely simple formalism. So let me define it in a slightly different way than it was done in the lecture, because in the lecture you already built in, as I see, a few syntactic abbreviations, whereas now I would like to have as many things as possible as primitives. So Lutz, once he's back, he will not be following this, but it will be more convenient for us to say that in our syntax we have both conjunction, disjunction, both top and bottom as primitives. And, shall I introduce negation here? For the time being, let me distinguish then between positive and unrestricted Hannes-Milner logic. So this I will call positive HML, positive Hannes-Milner logic. And let me also define unrestricted Hannes-Milner logic. And here, because we will have negation, note that this was the most important difference. I am of course allowed, entitled to use the standard abbreviations that we had. So in the lecture, the primitives were conjunction, bottom, box. And this is the most important bit, negation. So the obvious observation, so far, I wanted to say obvious observation is that things can be defined in unrestricted Hannes-Milner logic, but in order to formally state that things are definable, I need, of course, to define how the syntax relates to internet semantics. So this will be our first attempt at defining semantics. Later on today in the lecture we will redefine semantics again using game theoretic terms, because they turn out to work particularly nicely with the recursive equations and mu calculus stuff. And then it is also possible to disguise the definition of semantics in algebraic terms. Maybe let me actually experiment and give the definition directly already in algebraic terms, so slightly differently than this forcing Kripke style relation, even though morally it would be the same thing. And we will see soon, hopefully, why I want to do it this way. So the semantics of our formulas now is a function a name to this. I don't have colorful chalk, unfortunately. This would be PFHML, and that would be UFHML. So positive formulas of Hannes-Milner logic and unrestricted formulas of Hannes-Milner logic. Or actually, I could delete this because in this is the standard notation is in use so far. So semantics of both positive and unrestricted formulas is defined in terms of a function from the set of formulas such that sorry, so it can, as a function from the set of formulas to the power set of this Q. So let me write it with the square semantic brackets. Is this clear? What is this notation used in the remaining part of this lecture? The power set was denoted as P of Q or 2 to the power of Q? Or
P of Q, I guess.
P of Q, okay, good. So power set. But in fact, this is not so interesting in the language which has no variables. This would be a constant function here. Well, it will have to be it. So maybe let me also remark that this form is either P F H M all U F. So the semantics of bottom will be what?
The empty set.
Exactly. The semantic of top? The cube, of course. The semantic of phi, well, let me write it, phi star of psi, is this, where the star can be conjunction or disjunction, and this thing can be, this dot can be either intersection or sum. Right? That's quite obvious. For the negation, well, it's probably rather clear what it is. And for what is left for the modal operators. How do we define this? So this was already hopefully done in the lecture. It was just defined in a different way. So with this Purcell kind of notation. So this is the set of all those small q that was the beta variable being used.
S and T.
S and T. Okay. Try to be as simple as the set of those S such that there exists P such that S alpha T and T in T is in the extension of I, whereas this thing is a set of S such that for all T such that ST, we have that T belongs. Good. So, the obvious observation then is that that the notation of diamond alpha phi is the same as what?
You mean the notation of not box not phi?
Yeah. Similarly, of course, this is good all the more than low. This junction is the same thing as not phi, not, sorry, what else are we missing, superficially missing in the unrestricted financial logic? And then, and of course, top is the same thing as negation bottom. So this is why in the unrestricted Hennessy-Minner logic we could leave them out. But in absence of negation, we need all these connectives as primitives. But so far, this is not very interesting thing, because the language is so restricted that we have only constant things. So this, as soon as we define an our LTS, the denotation of each formula is defined uniquely. Well, that will be the case also when you start extending language with variables and recursive equations. So there is already one important, another important observation that we can make, though, namely, the positive formulas, not the unrestricted ones, but the formulas of the positive Hennessy-Minner logic, have some very important property. Can you guess which one? Given the meta theorems that were proved so far. Maybe actually, in order to state it, it's good to define and read. Now I would really love to have a piece of colorful chalk. Should be that only part of the equipment of the room, but no. So maybe now let me define an extension of the language with a variable, a single variable x. So this is the additional primitive, right? And now I need to extend the I need to suitably adjust definition of semantics. So this was semantics of PFML or UFML, PFHML or UFHML. Now I want to extend it with this additional variable, and now it's going to be something slightly more complicated. So our variable is like wildcard, and now in order to interpret it, we turn this in, this thing into a function from the power set to power set. Right? So let's use, I don't know if there was a specific notation used in the lecture for subsets of Q. Let's say that we use A, B as metavariables ranging over subsets of Q elements of the power set. So now most of the clauses will not change that much. So regardless in which state we will, in which set we use to evaluate this formula, well, this is not a very way of, very good way of phrasing this, we'll get a bottom here and a cube here. This will also remain in principle the same, just make parametric now in the choice of our A. But I need a clause right now to interpret the variable. And it's simply the eights. So what is the specific, what we can say for sure about this function when this formx here is pfhmlx? So there was a very important property called monotonicity, right? Okay. And this peak here is very important, positive. We have that for any LTS Q survivor, and for any A B in Q, we have that A contained in B means that similar containment holds after we apply our semantic function. How do we prove it?
By induction on the formula.
So, obviously, intersection and some are monotonic and both arguments. This is the constant also pose no problem. But the interesting part maybe is that the polar alternators as well are monotonic. So, in particular, it means that the fixed point theorem that we have seen for complete lattices will apply to them. So, what is the complete lattice that I'm talking about?
Power set of Q.
Exactly. That's the fixed point theorem. Applies to this guy. The complete lattice in question is obviously power set of two. So, what exactly did this theorem say?
It says there is a least fixed point, mm-hmm. and it is given as the
So if it's the least thing, it's probably
yeah.
when you intersect sets, you make the thing smaller, right?
Section.
So it must be an intersection of what kinds? We have 3 and post. Okay, we will return to that probably. So at any rate, we know then that this function has always smallest and greatest fixed point, right? This is what matters. Will this remain true? Oh, that's a great invention. So will this remain true in when I replace P FHML by U FHML? And what would be a good example?
Not X.
Exactly. So maybe let's just write it as a quick observation that for phi in UFHML does not have to be monotonic anymore. Sorry, I should write this x here, because strictly speaking, PFHML or UFHML, they have Hermesian logic or the positive Milner logic, they have no variables, right? It's so in this extension of, with one variable, consider this. But maybe it is not monotonic, but still has a fixed point, right? The Tarski fixed point theorem only provides a sufficient condition for having both smallest and greatest fixed point, but it doesn't say anything about this being a necessary one. And indeed, in general, there are special classes of labeled transition structures and special classes of formulas where we can obtain a fixed point result even in absence of monotonicity. This is not really what this lecture is about. But will this be true for this guy? So let's assume that our Q is just one element set. And we may even have no transitions whatsoever. It doesn't really matter.
Would be a set that is equal to its own complement.
Right, and there is no such set, right? So, not only this thing is not monotonic, but more importantly, it doesn't have any fixed point. In fact, maybe let's try to scribble this here. This thing doesn't have a fixed point on any non-empty cube. It does not mean that we are completely in a completely hopeless situation as soon as bits of negation start to appear in the language. So a sufficient condition for monotonicity, even if the formula contains such choice of negations, would be, for example, is that something you would think of? Well, let's assume, moreover, that we write everything in negation normal form, which is something that we can do thanks to those observations. So we can always try to push negation inside the formula as much as possible. Observe that, actually I said, that we don't have any variables in the original syntax of Nesselmüller logic, and if we don't have any variables, then it doesn't really matter so much if you take the syntax of a UFHML or PFHML. Because if you keep pushing negation to the lowermost inside the formula as much as possible using this observation, then you will end up hitting it, right? Because in the end you will always hit either the truth or for the absurdity or truth, and you will simply flip them using negation and that would be it, and then negation will disappear. So negation is only important when you start adding. So this was another reason why probably Professor Schroeder was not paying so much attention to it in the lecture, because in absence of variables, it really isn't considered. So it's only when we add those variables, when we don't know anything about this x, where it really matters that we can then we can write things like not x. Otherwise, writing things like not bottom or not top will not really change the situation so much. Where those issues start to arise. So let's assume. So maybe let me write down a few of those things that I just said. So observation. In pure HML, you have print. Without X, absence or presence of negation is, the choice between UFHML and PFHML, the unrestricted and the positive syntax, is just a matter of convenience or taste. The choice between positive and unrestricted syntax is simple matter of convenience. We can always remove negation by repeated applications of observation. Let me give some name to this observation. Mutual definabilityness. By repeated application of mutual definability. So we could still define, even in presence of negation, we could still define the notion of negation normal form, where we push negation as much as possible in the formula. And then if we end up double negating a variable, simply remove the double negation. So you use also the fact that double negation, which we could write as part of our mutual definability observation, that the notation of not phi is the same as the notation of phi. And then we would end up with something which turns out to be essentially positive, even though superficially has some negations in it. Or some formulas where we were not able to remove the negation after repeated application of this after the application of this algorithm. Another way of formulating having negation of having some form of monotonicity in presence of negation, or having a syntactic condition in presence of negation which ensures monotonicity, would be to avoid this whole pushing through approach by this mutual definability observation, and simply for every occurrence of our variable, pay attention whether the number of negations in the scope is odd or even. So that if you double negated something, you end up with something. Right? So if you have evenly many negations, you end up with something which is still positive, morally positive, and hence monotonic. So these are the issues that one has to take care of in order to talk about monotonicity in a language involving negation. Okay, so we know now that for some classes of formulas, greatest and smallest fixed points are guaranteed to exist, for some other not necessarily so. Now, why do we talk about this at all? It's not that I'm lecturing Lattice theory after all. So our primary main concern, after Hennessy-Miller logic was introduced, and we introduced some nice characterizations by notion of bisimulation that you actually happen to be familiar with anyway, was our ability to express or define things. And I'm not quite sure, and you were not in the last lecture anyway, if What were the examples of things that were definable in Hennessy-Miller logic in the lecture? If my notes serve me right,
it seems that
Lutz was using examples like every. Actually, these were already examples for things expressible in the language extended with one variable and extended with two recursive equations. So it seems that I'm redoing then some of the last week, but we have no way of checking it. So what are the examples of things that are expressible in the language, in the original UFHML or PFHML without our variable x?
Things like there is a successor with there is an alpha successor, for example.
Mm-hmm. So if we give some concrete names to those actions, for example, I don't know, reset, I don't know what that example, send, commit, is that it is possible to reset, or there is a state, there is a development in which will be possible to do commit after reset, or commit after send, or in whenever we do commit, we will be able to in the present starting from premises, in the very state that we are right now, we do commit, we'll be able to do reset afterwards. But we soon hit the limits of syntactic expressibility, and after Elgrudal, it's probably not much of surprise that there isn't so much to that there are limits to how much we can express in the language. So let's say that I want to say that in no matter how many times after each execution of the commit or reset or send action, it will be possible to do it once again, in whatever state I will reach after those repeated executions. Is this something that I would be able to express in my language?
Well, I could. So you're asking if there is a state which is its own successor, or
No. What we don't necessarily assume that after I do send or commit or reset, I will end up in the same state that I. That I'm starting from right now, right? That I will keep living in the same state. Quite to the contrary, okay. It might be, and it may, in some cases it even has to be, something else. But no matter in which state I end up, also when I have some indeterminism built in, so there is more than one possible state which can be reached by the execution of my action. One step execution of my action, I will be still in any of those states, I will be able to do something, and then I will be able to do the same thing, let's say, and then after I do the same thing, whatever states I will reach then, maybe let's make it more concrete by drawing send, commit. I'm not using very meaningful names here, right? It's just to. But here I also have send. but no self. So I call this state S1, S2, S3, S4. I want to be able to say no matter how many times I execute send, I still will be able to do it again in whatever state I would be then. This is what I'm asking for. So clearly, it will be have to be something stronger than just saying send top, right? It will be also something stronger than saying after each execution of send, I will be still able to do that.
And then I can keep adding boxes.
Yes, right? So in this particular case, we have a structure where whatever can be reached by send from S1 can be reached in two steps. Right? So probably some conjunction with three conjunctions, so we do the job. But it's only because of the special state of the structure. Now, it's not hard to guess that I will be able to do some trivial modification to the structure. We will force me to add more and more of those conjuncts. Alright? So in principle what I'm looking for would be an infinite conjunction of things. Right? It would be something like saying for each n in natural numbers, box send n diamond send top. Right? But obviously this is not part of my syntax. I'm not talking about infinite logic here. So, an exercise, a very good exercise for the notion of by simulation that we have seen in the previous lectures, is to show that this cannot be done by any finite model formula. Any formula of kernel similar logic of PFHML or URM. So I can even state this exercise, maybe given how late I am, we should probably not spend more time on this. But there's this exercise, which probably wouldn't be marked by user or anything like this, but show that the above property cannot be expressed by any final Euler formula. Any formula of TF HML, UF HML. Similarly, so that's one type of properties. Safety or invariance, but we may try to go from the other end as well and try to say something after some sequence of sense, I will be able to do regression. Right? So in this case, it should be a formula which is weaker than just saying, I can do reset right now, right? Because it's not necessarily true in our S1. So it should be a formula weaker than reset top, but it also cannot be a formula saying simply after I do one send, I would be able to reset. It should not be also a formula as strong as disjunction of these two together with diamond send, diamond reset top. It should be something like infinite disjunction of those formulas, right? So, here is diamond and sand, diamond reset. Okay. Again, an exercise showed that, so in this case, we were able to do that after two steps. Not after, in each state, we'll end up with two, but one is good enough. So, this thing was in like invariance property. This is rather expressing something positive, that something must, should be able to happen. So, in order to, and actually, before we go on, as we are already familiar with first order logic too, and you know what are the tools one can use to characterize expressivity of first order formulas, you can probably notice that also if we introduce first order syntax, where we have binary relation symbols corresponding to each element of R, this kind of things will be not something that you can express anyway, even if you extend the syntax to the full first order. So then you need tools rather like reference precedence, but so extending in towards first order logic is one direction in which one can go. Extending to second, extending what is recursive kind of equations that I want to start talking about now is another direction, and they are kind of orthogonal to each other. Right? So, Lutz has mentioned, Professor Schroeder has mentioned in the last lecture, and you are familiar anyway with with this result that for to compare Hennessy linear logic or modal logic in general with first order extensions, we have this Van Benten-Rosen theorem, saying that this is precisely a by simulation invariant fragment of first order logic. But the inexpressibility of such properties in Hennessy linear logic does not hinge on it's the by simulations are not the problem here. Also, when we restrict not the main issue here. Also, when we extend the language to first order one, we will still not be able to express examples. So, in order to overcome this limitation, which is a painful one, if you want to really reason about transition systems and their properties, we introduce this notion of recursive equation. So, maybe let's keep it actually. No, but syntax I also want to keep. Okay, well, we remember what the example was. So, a new equation, let's call it, over P F H M L X is of the form X equal to F of X where, sorry, phi of X, let's say, where we don't even need to write this X explicitly, we simply say that this phi is an element of P F H M L of X with the subscript min. The new equation over P F H M L X is of the form X max phi, where P is P F H M L X. And we interpret those equations using, so one way of giving them semantics is using the Tarski fixed point theorem. We are the Tarski algebraic semantics. Because we still have not reached the issue of game theoretical semantics. So new equations or equation with the subscript mean are interpreted as smallest fixed point, and new equations or equation with superscript max are interpreted as greatest fixed point. So, how would we then express the first property, which I just very smartly erased, just to recall, it was saying that every after every sequence of sense, I would be still able to sum it. Will it be smallest or greatest?
Smallest, I guess.
Actually, no. So the new fixed points, these guys, correspond to such things. So here we really want to reach this either in one steps or in two steps or in three steps, and the smallest possible such set will do inductive. But so here we are saying something positive. Well, positive in a different sense that syntax of negation is positive. But here we want to. In case of the first example, the invariance example, we just want to have an assurance that which may be satisfied with by. Maybe it's not a very good way of explaining this, but maybe I should have chosen a slightly different example, such as the one Lutz was using last time. Every rechargeable state can reset. But this is actually not so different from what I'm talking about. So, our first example then is expressed as, well, oh, luckily enough we still have a trace left. So, our first example then is x is equal to max of diamond sand top and box sand x. Whereas our second example is x is equal to minimum of diamond reset top or diamond sand diamond reset top. Sorry, it's getting me. But this algebraic semantics, I guess, is not what is going to be used anyway in the part of the lecture dealing with recursive equations. What it's going to be used instead would be game theoretical semantics for Hadassian logic extended with one variable. That's probably the last thing that I can do today. Assuming that we can really call this formal development. So, game semantics for H, F, PML, X.
Diamonds and X.
Oh, sorry! Of course, this is completely nonsensical. Yes. Sorry, yeah. That's why it's the equation. So, now we would convert, given a formula of HFPMLX, we convert the whole label transition structure, or rather the set of pairs consisting of subformulas of our formula and the states of our label transition structure into a board. Given phi in HFPML x and S in given also T, sorry, not S, and t of the form q blah 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 blah. We have the set of position given us consists of pairs psi s, where psi is a subformula of phi, and S is an element of Q. So, just like the Lebesgue transition system itself had transition, there would be, we also have a notion of transitions between positions. Is the word transition also used here? Let me double check. Sorry, successor configuration. That's the right word. So we also introduce a relation of being successor configuration so for any S in Q, S top and S false, S bottom have no successors. Once you reach it, the game gets stuck. For S psi 1 dot psi 2, where this dot is either conjunction or disjunction. Successor configurations as far as I see, no, but of course...
I think it might be practical to have one.
Yeah, let's do it. Even so, well, let's just be careful not to... because, as you will see now in the next item, the successor configurations will cover both syntactic subformula and the semantic. The relation of being semantic successor, namely being reachable by alpha, right? But okay, let's do some funny kind of arrow, like double wiggle arrow, let's say. So I would really love to have some colorful piece of chalk here, because otherwise it's completely messy. So successor configurations is S psi 1 and S psi 2, and we can denote it then as postulated by Paul as S psi 1 psi 2 wiggle wiggle. That's psi 1, and wiggle, wiggle. That's psi 2. And now, so this is like being a subformulary, but then the next thing combines the syntactic property of being subformula with the semantic property of being a successor. So for S diamond alpha phi and S box alpha phi, the successor configuration is S maybe let me write it anyway. So successor configurations are T phi, where T is such that is any such that you can reach it in one step from one alpha step from S. So in symbols we can write it that wiggle can take us from S diamond alpha phi to T phi if you can reach S. You can reach T from S by alpha transition. Okay, that would take care of PFHML or UFHML without our variable X. But once we introduce the variable X, then we need not just a formula, but rather an equation. But given that we take this chosen formula, which is presumably the outermost level of our equation, we assume then that our equation is either of the form x min equals min phi or x equals max phi. Then the successor configuration for Sx is just so finally, Sx steps to S phi, where phi was given in the input as the input. So actually, the really correct way of writing this wiggle wiggle thing would also require that you write explicitly both the structure. This T is not very good because you confuse it with top. I don't know why it's chose this, but okay, let's write calligraphic T for our structure here. So then we write this here as well. So now these guys, we see in the very notation that these guys are supposed to be subformulas of this guy. Aha, and now I allowed phi here, so it should be psi, where psi is a subformula of phi. How does one make a system if you have a board set up so nicely? So obviously, attack, we will have two players, attacker and defender. And attacker chooses in the difficult cases from the point of view of making formula true. So the difficult situations will have conjunction and box. Whereas defender chooses where it's easier to make formula true, but harder to falsify it. So, attacker chooses in conjunction and box alpha case. Defender chooses in disjunction and diamond alpha case. Assuming there is anything to be chosen, right? Because if you have only one successor, for example, then there is not much to choose here for box alpha and diamond alpha case. Well, in conjunction and disjunction, I mean, the only thing that can go wrong is that you have two things, two identical formulas on both sides. So, in all the other cases, there is either no successor configuration whatsoever, like for top and bottom, or it's uniquely determined, as in case of the X, right? So, now, then we want to redefine satisfaction in such a way that we want to say that the formula is true at a given point, if you start our game, sorry, or rather that the equation, that the point belongs to the property, it belongs to the notation of the property determined by this equation, if when you start the game in this position, in the position phi, S phi, the defender will win the game. When does defender win the game? So game clearly can go infinitely long because of this case. You see how this recursion allows us to loop infinitely. It's clear that if we don't have this recursive equation, we don't have x, after finitely many steps, we will get stuck in either top and bottom. So defender wins, of course, if we finish with top. And he wins he or she. The convention is that attacker is he and defender is she. So defender will win if the equation in question was what it wins either when the attacker gets stuck, or when the we end up with top, or when the equation in question was subscribed with me, and the game lasts infinitely long. Sorry, if it was superscribed by Max, sorry, then the defender will win. Then the attacker wins if the game ends up in false, or the defender gets stuck, or when game goes infinitely long and the subscript was me. So let's just write quickly, winning for attacker false, defender stuck, infinite game for me. Winning for defender, top, sorry, I'm using now the notation of the book, so here we should write top and bottom. top attacker stack. Infinite game for Max. So sorry for overriding so much. And now the interesting part is to prove that these two game theoretical, these two characterizations, the game theoretical one and the fixed point, and the one using Tarski theorem over lattices, are somehow related to each other. So we still haven't formally expressed what it could mean, the equivalence of these two definitions, and then putting them to some good use, right? So actually see how you can define concrete properties using especially this game theoretical. How can work with this game theoretical definition? I guess Sergey will try to do something, some of that. Yeah. If you're interested, then these are some example references of modern nuclear views. Mm-hmm. One of them is that is a modern nuclear views by the Venomorphs and Gigi Fan online. Another is a chapter for anthropomonology by Rapper and Skilling. There is also a monograph by Arnold and Nivinsky, which actually is going to be used right now in our seminar, if you still have time to attend. By Daniel Hausmann. But as I said, you don't really need to be even familiar with the syntax of modern fixed point values for this lecture. It's carefully made the rapier about it. Okay, sorry for keeping you safe.